Yeah. Okay, now talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
So our beautiful friend who's grown her wings and flown off to Canada, yeah. She was having a really, really sad moment.
I know.
She was like...
I heard.
Not doing great. And I said, I have an announcement to make. I'm not feeling like the sad person so much anymore. I'm feeling a little bit more normal. So
that's boring. Why would you want to feel normal?
No, but I think it's just more, I think it's actually after the memorial service and everything, like, I think it helped with, like, lightening up. Yeah.
Oh, Rachel, I'm so pleased.
Yes. So I'm kind of, like, feeling a little bit happier every now and then.
Every now and then?
Yeah.
Can't do it all the time. You want to set an expectation.
So, anywho, it all relates to our topic today about motherhood, burnout.
Yes.
So
all of the burnout.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. On the topic of motherhood burnout, we did manage our library gang group to have a night or two, depending on our crazy schedules, to have a night away from our families and just be together as our girl gang, and particularly celebrating the fact that one of our girl gang was moving back to Canada.
I know. And I miss us so much.
Yeah, I know.
And I also think actually that, like, I had a few social things and time out and everything, and I was like, oh, that's funny how that boosts the mood.
Yeah.
Spending time with girlfriends for 48 hours.
Yeah.
Makes you feel really nice, and that's not what we had enough of in 2020.
No, we didn't.
So...
I think that it's got to be the right kind of people that you're around as well. Like, you have to be pretty choosy about that.
Yes.
Because if you're around people who are like judgy, comparative kind of competitive lifing, no one needs that.
No, you don't need it to feel like work.
No, exactly. You just need like a gang of people who love you no matter what.
Yeah. And you and I both went away over Easter.
Yeah.
And even just at that, our little mini holiday. So, like, we're going to talk today about motherhood burnout.
Uh-huh. We are.
And we're going to talk about workplace burnout.
All of the burnouts.
And then I think it's relevant to talk about COVID burnout.
Yeah.
So.
And then maybe we get in the car and we do some burnouts. You can take the Westie out of the girl. You can't take the girl. No.
Have you actually done burnouts before?
No.
Have you been in a car while burnouts were had?
Yes. Yes. And I have driven ridiculous speeds on highways that weren't meant to be driven that fast on. But I'm a grown up now. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Thank goodness. So let's go.
Let's go.
Motherhood burnout. You did your very, very personal single episode a little while ago.
Yep.
Have you reflected on that? How are you feeling about that?
Well, I have booked my holiday. I'm going away for a whole week in July.
Nice.
So that's good.
Just you, yourself, and I?
Just me.
That's
going to be so creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm going to Byron.
Nice.
Because I wanted to have a retreat, but not really a retreat. I didn't want to be locked away in the mountains.
No.
I wanted to have my own retreat, which involves wandering past shops.
Yep.
Having a coffee.
Yep.
Eating some good food.
Mm-hmm.
Doing some yoga.
Yep.
Sitting on the beach.
Yep.
Journaling. Whatever it is.
Nice.
So I'm doing a DIY retreat.
That sounds delightful.
I know.
And very much like the one that I did when I was experiencing my motherhood burnout. 2005, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I was... absolutely just completely burnt out and just, you know, didn't know what to do with myself, overwhelmed by everything. And I took myself off for a week on the Sunshine Coast. And not everyone gets this luxury. We are very aware that this is a luxury that not everybody gets to have, but carving out little bits I think is definitely a possibility. Tiny little places of moments of joy and just you-ness, I think, is a thing that we can all try a bit harder to do, maybe.
Absolutely. Because my motherhood burnout was getting to the stage where I just wanted to exit.
Yeah.
Kramer versus Kramer style.
Wow.
Have you seen that?
Of course I've seen it.
I only saw it like 2 years ago or something.
Yeah.
I always go like a couple of months ago and then I go, no, wait a minute. Pre-COVID, it was probably 2 years ago.
Yeah. That's an incredible, incredible masterclass in acting.
Like,
they're just brilliant, both of them.
Yes. So it's Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep. Yeah, it is Meryl Streep.
Yep. Incredible.
Yeah.
And she just leaves.
Basically, she's just struggling with their young son, and she's just like, it tries to signal that she's struggling, I think, and then just one day just has completely cracks it and just goes.
Yeah.
And so the dad is left to pick up the pieces when she comes back after a couple of months, I think.
I can't remember the specifics. It's been too long for me.
Yeah, yeah. She just leaves without a trace and then comes back and says, I was in a really bad headspace. I'm better now. Mm. Can I come back into the family? And the dad's like, no.
Yeah.
No, you can't just walk out on your family.
Yeah, without so much as a conversation previously, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, and I think most of it is about sort of, I always heard it was about like child custody and stuff like that, because most of it is about the legal battle that ensues. It's like 70s, is it?
Yeah. Very early, very before its time, and particularly the idea that a father would want custody of their children at a time when definitely it was all mothers got custody. So, yeah, really fascinating, but really points to that trying to do it alone is really hard, and not speaking your needs and that kind of thing, and then leaving without a trace, I think is just, there's ways of us doing these things without going to that extreme. So I'm glad that you're getting your week off.
Well, yes. And I think like since I first identified it, probably at the start of the year, I have had Miss Hannigan from Annie as my little kind of totem for how I feel.
Wow.
Which is really kind of funny because Annie was my favourite movie growing up.
Wow.
Being little redhead.
Of course.
To think that I was doing a rewatch of it and I was like, I used to identify with Annie.
And now
I identify with Miss Hannigan.
And that's not who you want to be in the world.
It's not who you want to be in the world. Mm. Look, I think that there's that adult part of me that is, look at her wearing her caftans and like living her most fabulous life. I think there's something, I think as a child, she absolutely terrified me. I was just like, what a witch. And now I'm like, actually, she's kind of cool. But I think what watching through it, this poor woman just surrounded by children with no one else for any company, underfunded, under-resourced, lonely and miserable.
Mm.
And I think actually on rewatch, if anyone wants to kind of have a go and see what you can find through that lens of empathy for Miss Hannigan, I feel like there's times when she's trying to be loving and kind, but she can connect with it for about a second and then someone puts a mouse down her dress or stomps on her toe.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I was feeling, Nick. Yeah.
You felt like there was a mouse down your dress.
I felt like there was a mouse down my dress.
Mm-hmm. And everyone was putting it in there.
And I was putting through reports to the higher management of the orphanage and no one was coming to relieve me. So I pulled up some articles on workplace burnout.
Yeah.
Like I said in my solo recording, I feel like burnout for me felt like the right word.
Mm.
Just, I do not like this job anymore and it's not a lot of fun.
Mm.
And the idea of getting up to do the job of being a mother is just like, can I do anything else right now?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I get that.
Have you ever gotten to the stage of burnout at work?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah. And for me, I know that I get to that place when I just don't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really dangerous place for me because you know how I am. Mm. My heart is on my sleeve. I care very deeply.
Yeah.
I really want to have a positive impact. Mm. I really want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. If I see something that's not right, I want to make it right. Mm. If I see someone who's not happy, I want to make them happy.
Yeah.
And so at work, I know when my empathy kind of falls off a cliff, I know that something's not right. And it's really interesting in all the discussions around burnout in the workplace, how it very much focuses on the individual and what you can do about, you know, addressing your burnout. And I remember finding an article when I was struggling with this kind of stuff, talking about burnout in the workplace is not about you, it's actually about the workplace.
Yeah.
And this whole concept of, you know, a canary is a happy little bird, yellow and fluffy and singing away in its song.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets sent down the mine. That's its job, mm-hmm. right? That's its workplace is the mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes down the mine. And of course, you know, what happens in a mine? It's not the greatest of workplaces. Mm. It's dusty. It's dirty. It's gassy.
Mm-hmm.
The bird gets filthy and it gets sick. We don't then say to the bird, oh, look at you. What mm-hmm. have you done to make yourself feel terrible?
Mm-hmm.
We realize that the mine has made the bird sick.
Yep.
And I think for a lot of us, we've been canaries in our little mines. Mm. And a lot of the times, there are serious systemic workplace issues
mm.
that have been challenging to the point of causing burnout
yeah.
in not just us as individuals, but employees more generally.
Sure.
So, yeah.
I agree. I've certainly worked at workplaces that have said, hey, don't get burnout. Here's what you can do to prevent it.
Yeah.
At the expense of looking
But also at you have not enough resources, but also yeah. you have to work overtime, but also we're yeah. not paying you for that overtime, yeah. but also we're going to ping you on yeah. the weekends, you know, like that kind of thing. But don't get burnout.
I know. Did you see that news article that was about Victorian police arguing for – can we please not be contacted in non-work time? Did you see that?
No.
It was a couple of months ago. Saw it and I shared it on my Facebook because I was like, yes.
Mm.
Yeah, I see that a lot as a psychologist, just people who are kind of like, I'm very stressed at work. And they're just like always contactable and never allowed to switch off. And it just makes me really, 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 really cross.
Yeah.
To see that happening. The French government
put something in place.
Did they?
Yeah, about emails after a certain time or that kind of thing. Actual legislation from what I remember. I'll have to dig it out and pop it in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. Would you like me to tell you some of the actual known causes of job burnout?
Oh, give us some facts. Which are
not about the individual.
Hit me with some facts, Rach.
It's related to stress, right? Mm. Stress and trauma kind of exist on the spectrum of when we get to the stage where what we're coping with, what we have coming at us, overwhelms our capacity to manage and navigate those things.
Mm-hmm.
So my little kind of imagery for stress is like life's conveyor belt, like at a factory or something like that.
Uh-huh.
If life is kind of sending you too many packages down that conveyor belt, too many at once, or too many that you haven't been trained to know how to do, you haven't got the resources or the parts to know how to do those parts that's coming at you. I like to say that mothers are juggling in this day and age multiple conveyor belts.
Yeah.
One of them is like work and one of them is kids. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff like, you know, my own health and
being a daughter of parents.
Yeah. Being a good friend.
Yeah.
All of it.
That conveyor belt thing, if anyone wants to look it up, Google I Love Lucy. I think there's a I don't know what the wording is that you need to Google.
Uh-huh.
I Love Lucy Chocolate Factory.
Ah.
Because that is a really good image for just, you just cannot cope with all the things.
Yeah.
It's too many things.
Pace of the work and how resourced you feel should be like you get to clock on, having rested that morning, show up to your factory, have stuff come down the conveyor belt, work hard, take regular breaks so that you can kind of re-engage with the hard work and focus that you have to do. And then you get to punch your card, clock off and go home. And you should only do 40 hours per week plus breaks. Life will work well.
Yes.
Now, if the scales tip towards this kind of more stress, so trauma is kind of like big shit coming down the conveyor belt, which is just like, I am too overwhelmed with this.
Yeah.
And of course, our conveyor belts are going to get glitchy when we experience something traumatic.
Mm.
So I think burnout is described as our natural response to chronic stress because we just can't live like that for too long. We can have a rough week where there's lots of stuff coming at us, but we can't do it perpetually.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the symptoms. Let's see if these relate to you and I when we had our motherhood burnout. Chronic fatigue.
Mm.
Tick. Insomnia. Tick. Physical symptoms like headaches or stomach aches.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't get that so much. Although I do get kind of, like my massage therapist said, when she said concrete shoulders.
Yes.
Yes. That's always my sign.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Anger.
Mm-hmm.
Isolation.
Yeah.
Irritability.
Yeah.
Depression. I mean, that's just Miss Hannigan right there.
Yeah. It all sounds like Miss Hannigan.
So here
she sounds burned out.
Here are the things that cause job burnout. A feeling of having little control.
Mm-hmm.
What in motherhood do we have control over, really?
Yeah. Very little. A lot less than you ever anticipated before you had children.
Mm.
You thought, I know I did. Mm. I think probably because of the example set by my mum, we had our stuff together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I guess I never, you don't know as a child, all of the balls that are being juggled in order to keep that stuff together.
Yeah.
And when you become a grown up and you have your own kids, you realize how many damn balls / conveyor belts there are.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, I don't know how this is possible.
Yes. Yeah. Which is the whole kind of like, oh, before I, you know.
Yes.
Before I have children, they're never going to do this and they're always going to do that.
Oh, your hypothetical children are the most perfect children.
Yeah. And, you know, I generally actually feel like I'm fairly resilient and a lot of people say like I thrive on stress.
Ugh. Sorry.
Like your reaction.
That was a judgy reaction.
I mean, I think we all have our own personal kind of setting in terms of like how active and how many different things we want to do. I feel like I do overcommit myself because I get excited about a lot of different projects.
Yes.
And I wouldn't ever say that I thrive on stress because I have that same reaction as what you do. But I do like actually to stay busy.
Yeah.
And I like doing things. Yeah.
Interest.
And doing creative, interesting things is relaxing.
Yes.
But no one thrives on stress.
Mm.
You can thrive on being busy, maybe, to a certain extent. I just, for me, yeah, have 3 kids. Why not? Manage a business. Sure.
Sure.
Do a podcast. Of course.
Why not?
Write a book. I'll get there. COVID, global pandemic, wah, wah, wah.
I just don't even know what to say about that. I mean, really. And all of those things that were coming out at the start of the pandemic, if you don't come out of this pandemic having learned a new language or picked up an instrument, and I'm like, I do not know who you are, and I certainly don't want to be friends with you.
Absolute nonsense. And then dealing with little people who also felt like they didn't have much control.
Yeah.
Is a huge emotional labour.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because you're carrying your bag.
Yes.
But then you're also carrying their bags.
Yes.
Because your bag can't overwhelm their bags. Mm-hmm. You always, always, always have to be able to carry their bags.
Yep.
Even if you're dragging your own, you've got to carry theirs too.
Yep.
And yeah, it's
right. So when we feel disempowered because we don't feel like we can make decisions about what our workload is going to be or predict how long it's going to go for. All right, this is number one, feeling a lack of control. Oh, number two, being unsure about your expectations. Ooh. Yeah. So this is kind of like the bad team culture or the bad manager that doesn't really set clear role expectations and is just like, hello, this week you're doing dot, dot, dot. Next week, oh, I forgot I told you you were doing that. You're doing something completely different.
But you're also doing the dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. It's a little bit crazy making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you don't know where you stand.
Correct. And it also, I think for me, makes you feel like, what am I doing things for anyway?
Mm.
Because it seems to not actually go anywhere or make a difference.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's, yeah, like that's actually part of our setup as human beings, human superiority over other animals, is wanting to be busy, using imagination, anticipating how things could be different. Because, you know, the beautiful little dogs, God bless them, are not sitting there going, how can I renovate this house so it functions better?
I don't know. He's trying to renovate the garden so it functions better for him.
Renovate the garden. I suppose that's it. Yeah. Dig, dig, dig.
It's less about renovating it to make it better for him and more about finding a hole to put his stuff in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the literature around depression says that having a sense of mastery in something, so even more than doing fun things or having a sense of pleasure, is being able to work at something that gives you a sense of
achievement. Yeah,
correct. So when we don't feel that, all right, so how does that apply to motherhood?
Well, I've got 4, as we all know. Yes. Big one, old enough to be out in the world, bought her own place with her fiance, you know, living her best life. So I've been at this for a while,
mm-hmm.
and there is no way in this world that I would ever say that I have mastery when it comes to parenting. There are some days where I think, man, I did a good job. Mm-hmm. This is great. Somebody said they love me in an, you know, a surprising moment, or, you know, I got feedback from someone else about, you know, parent-teacher interviews. Can I just say they really fill my bucket? But
I'm the same as you.
There is never
because
a
they're brilliant at school and not always quite so brilliant at home.
But there's just never a moment when you feel like you've got this thing covered.
No, it's a project that's never.
Yes. And even I look at my mum and Paul's mum, and, you know, Paul's turning 50 next month. And so Paul's mum's baby is going to be a 50-year-old man. And she's got four kids, mm-hmm. and she's still in their lives and guiding and loving and, you know, mm-hmm. and my mum, you know, my sister and I are what, 47, 44 this year? Is that right? Yeah. Sorry. Numbers. And we're still being guided and loved and,
Which is why being a parent is both one of the most rewarding and fulfilling things and one of the most stressful and unrelenting and demanding. And it's both at the same time.
Both and. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wouldn't change it for quids, can I say?
Yeah.
Would never change it for quids.
Yes. Yeah. And I love that whole kind of like, you know, just when you feel like you've got a sense of mastery over particular tasks, the child moves on and develops other challenges for which we are ill-equipped.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Mm-hmm. They do like to mix it up.
Yes.
And, you know, as a parent of four kids, not one of them has the same things going on at the same time. So you can't kind of,
be convenient.
You know, that would be. Like the same kind of meltdown that you can master and you know, flow it through the four of them. No, definitely not. They all have their own little issues that you have to be challenged by.
Yes.
It's good learning.
Yes.
And it certainly teaches you a lot about who you are.
Yes.
Mm.
It's absolutely true. And what helps with that point number three is having a supportive work culture rather than a poor work culture.
Mm.
The attitude and morale of the people around you are going to impact upon how satisfied you feel at work.
Indeed.
Oh, whereas criticism, micromanagement. Oh my God, my children are such micromanagers. And some of the criticism is like deserved, such as you're always late, mummy. not feeling like you have friends and camaraderie at the office.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. There's something that I said to my mum actually recently that I like her and I love her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I can definitely say that about all four of my children, mm-hmm. that I like them and I love them.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes they're not on your team.
Mm.
They're really feeling like they're pulling against. Mm. And so you don't necessarily like them in that moment, mm-hmm. you know? And the same goes with any other workplace, mm-hmm. but particularly at home, the love can be there, but sometimes we're not liking each other very much if things are pulling against in the wrong direction.
Absolutely. Mm. Because it's kind of like the strategic direction.
Yeah.
Of the family.
What's our mission statement?
Yeah.
Actually, some families have mission statements.
Yeah, it's totally a thing I tell people to do sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
They need to have like a family intention, set a family intention kind of thing?
Yeah, because like there's a model of family therapy called structural family therapy,
mm-hmm.
and it looks at the family as being an organization like any other organization. And that organizations are going to work if there's leadership, mm-hmm. and connected leadership in the partners at the top,
mm-hmm.
and that there's like equality in the kind of, you know, employees / children.
Wow.
And that family dysfunction occurs when there's upset between the two appointed partners, yep. who are meant to be the shared ones.
The co-founders.
On the co-founders, mm-hmm. correct. Sorry, just having images of various different ways that families are co-founded. Anyway, it's really, really hard if you don't continually work towards, are we still on the same page in terms of this project that we're working at?
Yeah.
If the co-founders aren't working well, it creates space usually for one of the employees to make their way up into the hierarchy and be, hello, I think I'll run the show here.
Yes. Wow, yes.
Yeah, which is why in parenting they always like pretty much all the parenting programs say, number one is come to a united front with your partner. Mm-hmm. Don't allow for that wiggle room.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think like formulating a, even if you don't have it on the wall, like having a formalized way in which you say to your co-founder and say regularly, what are the main things we stand for? Because I think in my opinion, it also helps to like factor out the things you care not so much about.
Yes.
Because you can't be all of the things. Like if I want to be like fun and funny, then I probably can't also be a clean freak.
Yeah.
Because actually I'm not a clean freak anyway, so let's just face it. But for me, there's tension there in terms of which am I going to focus on? Because I do work, I do other stupid, crazy things, like to have time for me. So the time when I'm at home, my kids already are like, you're constantly cleaning, mummy. And I'm like, yes, I am constantly cleaning. Help me with the cleaning. Yeah. And then we can have the fun family time together.
Yeah. Put those duster slippers on and get walking on the floors.
See, even though I mostly say that in a Miss Hannigan way and it's not very helpful, I think actually the intention of what I'm trying to say is, as a family, we all live inside of this house. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we should all value contributing to the housework so that we can all then enjoy leisure time together.
Yeah.
This is where we get like family meetings type concepts as well, right?
Gotcha. So is this stuff that you do?
Me as a mum?
Yeah.
Loosely?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. We actually, coming out of my burnout and COVID and just chaos, we recently reconfigured our house rules.
Nice. You had house rules.
And made posters and stuck them on the wall.
Nice. And did that as a team?
No, I would like to say so.
Yeah.
But the reason that I made posters and put them on the wall was so that Ben and I could sit down together and go, here's our top three.
Yeah.
And here's how we're both going to respond to it. Mm. My personal experience is that I find that my husband and I struggle to find the time to sit down to have those conversations.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Yeah.
But also that he actually, I'm learning, cares less about making up house rules than what I do. And I also feel the sting of the illegitimacy where I'm telling people to do this and then I go home and I'm not doing it. So I have that pain point because I'm a family psychologist and he is not.
Yeah.
Because like we had to add in swearing as being one of our big rules. You'll love this.
Okay. Hit me with it.
I hope you'll love it. We're using a swear jar.
Yep.
But it's the proceeds of the swear jar go towards Donald Trump.
Ooh, that's tricky and clever.
Because my kids have learned in recent years that he is a not nice man and should not be supported in any way, shape or form. Yeah, it was more about saying that is the type of behaviour that a person who does not have good moral standing would exhibit.
Yes.
So if you're going to act that way, then obviously it is you are saying to me, I agree with these ideals and so I support these ideals. So that was the link.
Gotcha.
But anyway, I think, look, it's loosely based on some ideas, but I just made it up.
Yeah.
And then also I realised that we just got into the habit of just screaming and yelling a whole bunch of times. Like, you know, don't
XYZ.
Chase after your brother and punch him, la, la, la. And we weren't actually like following any of that up with an actual kind of consequence.
Yeah. Or I think for us it's switching the language around. Mm-hmm. So things like small two has – one, two and three have not ever said, I hate you or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Small two has and has gotten it in his head somehow that was acceptable at one point.
Right.
It has been a long time, can I say, since that's happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, for us it was like, that's not who we are.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
And that real collective, you are part of this tribe.
Yeah.
And this tribe, you know, really, really enforcing the tribe rule.
Yeah.
We don't do that because we think very carefully about how our words might hurt someone else.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the flip of that because you do get into that, oh, don't know, don't know, don't know. And it's just, it's not only terrible for them, but it's terrible for us.
I know. And that's what actually makes me feel like Miss Hannigan, right? Where
yes.
you're just kind of like this haggard woman where all, like, honestly, like, when she starts singing, like, little girls, I'm like, they're everywhere. They're beating me. They're all over me and there's nothing I can do, right? And, like, that's kind of how I was feeling, right? Mm. Just that sense of, like, it is useless what I'm saying at this point. And then
this is not working.
As parents, we're both yelling. We also have a habit of, like, I'll say to the kids, like, I'll reprimand them, like, you know, don't do that or whatever. And then Ben will be like, yes, don't do that. Listen to your mother. And I'm like, we don't have to double punish here. But it's because we're both annoyed.
And he's also backing you up, right?
Yes.
In that moment, that's him being the, exactly. the good co-founder.
Which is great. But the thing is, when you feel exhausted, it comes across as overly emotional rather than actually just kind of, here's the rules or, like, here's the policies and procedures.
Yeah.
Let's remind you about our values, yes, about our code of conduct, about our culture, and, you know, guide you. Redirect you.
Yeah. And of
course,
people
don't get redirected by some haggard woman going, stop doing that, please.
Yeah. But as in all workplace cultures, culture starts at the top.
Yes.
So the really hard work, I think, is in not just setting the expectation, but meeting it yourself.
Yes.
Totally true. You know, leading by example. That is really hard sometimes. And I think it's really important to apologize when you don't meet it, to actually say, look, I let myself and us down because I X, Y, Z.
Yes.
Because that's not what
that's
we
actually
do.
The whole point, that they're house rules.
Yeah.
So everyone has to abide by them.
Yeah.
Because I've actually changed. We used to have one, the major one was like, mummy doesn't yell unless it's dangerous. And that really came into play when they were little.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of kind of like, get down off there, stop in the car park, do this, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And it's like, if you're using that same tone of voice for everything, they're not going to hear it.
Mm.
It's not in our top three right now. It's hitting and hurting. Follow mummy and daddy's instructions. And don't swear.
Yeah, there you go.
It was actually funny the other day because I'm the least swearer, but the other morning I was having a moment and I said something like, no one's effing listening to me. And they all went, oh. And one of them said, Trump. And I said, yes, it was a Trump. And I went over and I put the money there and my husband did back me up and he said, Mum must be feeling really overwhelmed by how you're behaving this morning for her to say that word.
Yeah. That's next level.
So, you know, and that's the thing. If you're setting a good role model most of the time, they'll actually let you get away with
yes.
times when you're not quite so much.
Yeah.
Because it stands out as being, whoa.
And also the next time you're in the car, that's when you can let them all out.
Yes.
By yourself. I do notice that I get the most sweary when I'm in the car with Paul. Just me and him. All of the pent-up swears. Sorry, Mum.
Yes.
All of the pent-up swears come out in the car.
Yes.
And I get them all out.
Yes.
Because sometimes you just need to just,
needs to happen.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So that's number three on the list. There are five for time's sake. That was a good little segue anyway. I liked it. A lack of work-life balance, right? Ooh. So if you're biting your tongue all the time and calming yourself down and setting the good example, that actually you need to have somewhere for that build-up of stress to go.
Mm.
So sometimes you do need to do some swears in the car.
Do some swears in the car.
That's totally fine.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, scream into a pillow.
Mm-hmm. 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 This last one is about having a high engagement with your work, being over-engaged with your job, to the point that the job, like, becomes your identity, it's your everything, and everything revolves around the job.
Which a lot of retired old white men find very challenging because their entire work life was their identity.
Yeah. And this is a bit controversial because our culture does like to send mothers the message that their family is their everything at the expense of anything else.
It's really infuriating. You're a whole human person on your own, you know. And then separate to that, you're a whole human person who relates to other people. But first of all, you're a whole human person.
You are. Yes. And thank you to my beautiful friend, Nicole, for saying, Rach, it's not abnormal. You have not failed if you want to escape your family for a week because you're allowed to have alone time.
Yeah.
Even for a whole week.
Yeah.
If that's what you need. I said, I need a week away. And you said, I've done that. And I went, oh, someone else has done it.
Yes.
Tick of approval.
Oh, there you go.
It can be done.
Oh, I'm glad.
It was you.
I do remember.
Of course, everyone else logically supports it. That's fine. It's just this weird internalized sense of failure.
Yeah. And I remember when I did it, Paul sent me the most beautiful flowers, which is unusual because I don't normally like flowers, but he wanted to do something, right? And it was gorgeous. And I remember his mom was just like so worried about it because it was so out of the ordinary that I would want to have a week by myself. And I struggled with it. I must say. And I, you know, you might because you're like, where are my peeps at?
It's gonna be
weird. Where are my peeps at? But it was it was very restorative. And I think even the way in which everyone rallied to make that happen for me said that I was valued as a human in my workplace. So, you know, the fact that Paul was so incredibly supportive of it and made everything happen in the, you know, the rest of the kids' world, it just said to me, you're important. So same with you. Your workplace is saying to you, you are valuable and important and your health, mental and otherwise, is vital. We want a whole human to come back to our our workplace, have your holiday.
And that's the thing, when you are that miserable and you ask for help, people are like, thank God, take the help. Get the hell out of here now. Go. When can I pack your bags? Please go and come back.
It's I don't know if you've seen The West Wing.
No.
So the one of the very last episodes of The West Wing is Josh has been very high up in the Bartlett administration, then he runs the entire campaign for the Santos, you know, campaign, and they win and they're in transition, and he has not had a day off in like, you know, 8 years or something. And he starts to go a little bit bonkers, and he's tired, and he's just completely out of his tree. He tries to hire – so he's going to be chief of staff, and he tries to hire his friend Sam back as his deputy chief of staff. And Sam's making serious coin as a lawyer, and, you know, he's like, why would I do this? Life is good for me. And he comes to the office, and Josh loses his marbles and just completely – loses it at a staff member over his phone being lost, which he probably misplaced, but, you know, was yelling at the staff member about it. And Sam says to him, you need to leave right now because someone's getting on a plane tomorrow. You have to go tomorrow for a week. Go away. Because someone's getting on a plane tomorrow. If it's you, you'll be back in a week. If it's me, I'm never going to be back here again, you know. And that's – it's so true. Like, you're not useful to anyone at that level of burnout.
Yeah, and so, I think it's hard to see when you're in it too. And shaming to admit it. So it is very helpful for us to say burnout is not about the individual. It's about the system.
Absolutely. And the system, this last, you know, year has added on top of all of the things a damn pandemic. For crying out loud.
Just cray cray.
Just bonkerballs. So, it is okay to not be okay, and it's okay to ask for help. And what you're doing when you ask for help is giving someone else the ability to build their self-esteem and their little bucket of I'm a good person by helping you. Because I love helping people. So, you know, it makes me feel really good about myself. So give someone that opportunity to make themselves feel good. I think that's a good idea.
One thing my husband did say is he's like, great idea, take a week off, Rach. Can you also try and focus on taking more regular breaks and having more downtime? Which is completely valid. Because it's there's no such thing as just being some burnt out CEO that goes off to a wellness retreat once a year. It doesn't actually help. It's important to do those long breaks.
But you need a maintenance regime.
You do.
So I look forward to hearing about the maintenance regime.
Let's see. This is it.
This is it. Us just chatting.
That's right.
I like it. It has been too long.
Yeah.
And I have missed it.
I know.
And we're sorry that we're not as reliable as we would like to be on this, on this schedule.
But I do have news for you, speaking of not being very planned or organised, that next episode is going to be our 10th episode for season 4.
Oh, wow.
So after we do that one, then we can plan to take a little break.
Look at us go. And what are we talking about next time, Rach?
Well, I was thinking...
Jazz hands?
Hamilton.
Oh, Hamilton. Oh, that was what you were doing. Not that.
I was trying to do the star on the poster.
On the poster. Okay, we can definitely do Hamilton next time.
It's not very jazz hands, is it? I don't think there's any jazz hands in all of Hamilton.
I don't think there is a hip-hop hand.
No, so. I was thinking musical and the jazz hands just came out.
No, I'm getting you. I'm picking it up now. I just was not there at all.
Oh, God, sorry.
All right, so next time. We're going to talk about Hamilton.
Do, 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 do.
And as if I don't already have Hamilton earworms going constantly in my head, we have a Hamilton lyric for every occasion in our household.
Lovely.
So I look forward to discussing it with
you. Gorgeous. And I get to do a rewatch. Yeah, baby.
Oh, we love that. And in the meantime, everybody,
watch Annie because it's also an amazing musical.
Yes. Golly. Have you seen the new one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's a face that I don't want to watch it now.
No, it's okay. I'm just too much of a purist. No one's talking about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No one's rewatching it.
No.
It's like okay.
Yeah.
Like all modern movies, it's like too long.
Ugh.
And like too, you know, fancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Go back to the story.
It doesn't have
Carol Burnett. Anything without Carol Burnett is poorer for the experience.
Which is true. So it's okay. It's okay. It's watchable. It's not bad. But, yeah, I don't know if I'd be lining up to rewatch it.
Alrighty. Mm-hmm. That's good to know. Yeah. So find us on Facebook. Pop the kettle on. It's always tea time. Mm-hmm. Find Rach at The Little Shop of Pop and me at Nicole Lesio on Twitter if you're interested in anything that I come up with because it's very rare. And until next time, Rach.
Hug your babies.
Hug your babies. And be kind to yourselves and each other if you can. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.